To me, Newcastle was just the perfect size. I loved coming to university here, and I've actually stayed, and I don't think I'll ever leave. I'll be here for life. I absolutely love Newcastle.
Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Beste Zeit, dem Podcast zum Auslandsstudium von und mit College Contact. Ich bin Alexandra Michel.
Und ich bin Elias Merkel.
Und gemeinsam sind wir die Gastgeber dieses Podcasts, mit dem wir euer Fernweh wecken und euch dabei unterstützen wollen, eure ganz eigene beste Zeit zu erleben. Sei es im Rahmen eines Auslandssemesters, einer Summer School oder auch eines kompletten Studiums im Ausland.
In unserer ersten Folge im neuen Jahr hatten wir Debbie Choi und Adam El-Hindi von der University of Newcastle zu Gast.
Wenn ihr bei Newcastle jetzt jedoch an Fußball, Fish and Chips oder britisches Regenwetter denkt,
wie ich in der Vorbereitung,
dann habt ihr euch geirrt. Es gibt nämlich in Australien, quasi am anderen Ende der Welt, noch ein zweites Newcastle, in dem es deutlich sonniger zugeht und in dem Surfen mindestens genauso populär ist wie Fußball in England.
Und genau dort leben und arbeiten Debbie und Adam. Wir haben mit den beiden unter anderem darüber gesprochen, was Newcastle zur idealen Studentenstadt macht, für welche Fachrichtung die University of Newcastle besonders renommiert ist und welchen Tieren ihr auf dem Campus oder zumindest ganz in der Nähe über den Weg laufen könnt.
Also, lehnt euch zurück und geht ganz entspannt mit uns auf die Reise nach Australien. Hi Debbie, hi Adam, welcome to the podcast.
Hi Alex and Elias.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Hi. So let's jump right in. Back in October, when we had Katie and Simon from UTS in Sydney on our podcast, the borders to Australia were still closed to international students and other travelers. Fortunately, this has changed and the borders finally reopened on December 15th. Can you explain what this means for international students who are keen to study abroad in Australia later this year?
Yeah, absolutely. That's such a fascinating news to all of us. I think around the world as well, Australia is open. So what it means now is that fully vaccinated eligible visa holders, including international students, can now return to Australia without any travel exemption. So to get students ready to actually come into Australia, there are different rules and regulations, and the website of Study New South Wales pre-departure webpage is super helpful with a checklist and timeline to help you ensure when and what you have to follow before you actually depart and upon your arrival. So what it means at the moment for the students that are coming in, say, for semester one, they are looking at doing a rapid antigen test, what we call RAT, within the 24 hours and also on the day six. They don't need to go into any isolation unless they get tested positive. So one recommendation at the moment is really to first download the Service New South Wales apps to help them get them sorted once they arrive. It helps you to check in the location, show your vaccination proof, as well as reporting any positive rapid antigen tests if that is unfortunate case. And second thing is maybe it's a good idea to look at the Study New South Wales website to look at the list of approved test kit and bring it with you from your home country, so you don't need to look for that upon arrival. So that means students are coming into Australia now. We are looking forward to welcome some of them even in February. And hopefully the website will give them sufficient information to get themselves sorted around the COVID regulations.
Perfect. So we're definitely going to include those links in the show notes to this episode so students can check it out. And if I understand correctly, though, the rules are slightly different from state to state. So it's different in New South
Correct.
Wales to Victoria to Western Australia to Queensland. So it really depends where a student is headed, what rules they need to follow. But generally, they need to be vaccinated. There's only
Absolutely.
Very few exceptions, as we found with the recent Djokovic
yeah.
situation.
You don't want to be the second Djokovic.
No, absolutely not. And you don't want all the media attention. So you need to be fully vaccinated. You need to get tested before you leave, before you get on the plane. And then you need
yes.
to get tested again a couple of days after you've arrived, and you basically have to kind of monitor your health situation and give notice if you test positive. But there's no quarantine, no isolation, at least in New South Wales right now.
That's correct.
Fantastic. So that sounds really good. And you mentioned semester one, so you will actually have students come back for the February intake, right?
Yeah, we actually start to welcome some of them in December and then a few more in the pipeline. And hopefully in January and early Feb, we will have more and more students coming back into New South Wales.
That's awesome. I mean, by the time this podcast is published, which is probably going to be in mid to late January, it'll of course be too late to apply for semester one, but there's still plenty of time to apply to study abroad in Newcastle in semester two, starting in late July. So hopefully students will feel encouraged to take a closer look at the University of Newcastle and apply in good time.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Nice.
And when they take a look at Newcastle, they might also want to make sure that they got the right Newcastle, because when I think of Newcastle, I think of sort of industrial city in northern England. But your Newcastle looks very different, right?
Absolutely. They are very different. So if you're Googling, type in the University of Newcastle, not Newcastle University. So I guess that's the difference. Well, let's start with weather for one. So I was just looking up a bit earlier. So if you were to come in our semester one, which is February, coming in beautiful summertime, we average 25 degrees every day. Whereas Newcastle, UK at that time of year would be averaging 9 degrees. And then if you came in our semester two, starting in July, which is our winter, UK's summer, we actually both still average the same temperature of 18 degrees. So even in the middle of our winter, we're averaging the same temperature as their summer. So that really leads into us having a beautiful outdoors lifestyle. So you can be walking all year round. You can be getting down to the beach. We have 7 spectacular beaches and a coastline where you can walk the whole way along. Apart from the beaches and the scenery, we have this real vibrant art scene and music scene and cafes. People love to have a late brunch and coffees and just walk around. So the city is a place where you can just have a chat, just meet people. It's also, the last few years, it's really starting to become an innovation hub. So in 2019, we actually won Smart City of the Year in Australia. So yes, maybe back in the 70s, 80s, it was known as a bit industrial as well, BHP and the mining and stuff. But the city has completely changed over the last 20 years and is really gone in a very different direction.
Yeah, that sounds a lot different from the Newcastle that I was thinking of initially. Yeah.
And I would say, in terms of temperature, it may be the same in their summer, your winter, but probably there's a little less rain on your end.
Definitely less rain.
So at one point during our podcast episode with Katie and Simon, the rivalry between Sydney and Melbourne came up, and how people belong to either Team Sydney or Team Melbourne. And I don't know if you've listened to that episode yourselves, but Elias was still undecided at the end of the episode. although I think Simon and Katie definitely did a good job trying to kind of pull him into their corner. But I was wondering whether there is a similar rivalry between Sydney and Newcastle as well, especially given that the two cities are so close to each other, which is something we haven't mentioned, actually. So maybe you want to just briefly let us know where Newcastle is located on the map.
Yeah, absolutely. I would I'd definitely say there's a little rivalry because we're both in the same state. We're just 2 hours north of Sydney, so it's less than 200 kilometres away. And we're actually the second largest city in New South Wales. So I guess it's like big brother, little brother situation. You're always trying to outdo the big brother. I would say there's similarities and there's big differences. So we both have beautiful, spectacular coastline and beaches, but I guess I would say ours are not as crowded as theirs. So I love to go down to the beach and not be sitting right next to someone when I'm sunbaking. So I love that side of it. I heard Katie and Simon's podcast and I heard them talking about the Bondi to Coogee walk, which obviously is beautiful, but we actually have the Bathers Way walk, which is a 6 kilometre walk from Nobby's Beach to Merriweather Beach. It passes 7 beaches and includes the stunning Anzac Memorial Walk, which is a 450-metre cliff top walk out over the cliff face and gives spectacular views out over Merriweather. So something you must do if you come to Newcastle. Apart from that, I guess Newcastle, I think, gives you everything you need without the big city stress. So I personally come from a small town on the east coast of New South Wales. So when deciding which university to go to, Sydney to me felt very overwhelming and daunting with the size and population and just the hustle and bustle. So to me, Newcastle was just the perfect size. I loved coming to university here and I've actually stayed and I don't think I'll ever leave. I'll be here for life. I absolutely love Newcastle. Newcastle actually itself is a one city university, which makes for a great student nightlife. Everyone knows if you're out for student night, you all go to Newcastle Uni. Again, compared to Sydney, if you went to student night, you're still going to find a lot of people in the city because it's just such a big city, whereas the students just dominate the city on a night out in Newcastle. So I found that I really enjoyed that side of it. Having said all that about Sydney, I do love Sydney, but I just love that it's a few hours away. And if we want to go for a major event or just get away for a big city weekend of shopping and the like, at least we can get there within 2 hours, but I can always come back to the beautiful, peaceful place of Newcastle.
So it's basically the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I totally agree to Adam. In contrast, I actually come from big, busy city. I come from Hong Kong and I lived in Singapore before I come to Australia. Surprisingly, I settled really well in Newcastle for many obvious characteristics. I feel like I get very welcome personally once I arrived in Newcastle. Everyone just know everybody in the neighborhood, in the community, and introduce me to others. And this is how I felt very personally welcomed and get me settled in very easily. So as I reflect, like 3 years ago when I first moved here, how Adam welcomed me, how some of my colleagues and the neighbors actually welcomed me, the shop owners tell me how to navigate in the city, where to look for what I need. It was a very, very smooth settling. So I guess this might also be one of the things short-term study abroad students may like to consider because they only have like 5 months overseas and it's good that they settle in pretty quickly.
Right. So what's the typical mode of transportation in Newcastle? Would people ride their bikes or walk or take a bus?
I think I see a lot of people riding on a bike because most of the time I see people biking to the uni and park there and then bike back home. But transportation system is not as sophisticated as in Sydney, I think. We recently also have the tram system in the city that connects the city campus to the central station of Newcastle. Students usually also use the bus services to commute in the city, apart from the shuttle bus service that we already have.
Right. And if they want to go down to Sydney, they could either drive down or they could also take the train, I believe. Because I remember when I visited Newcastle a couple of years ago, I was staying in Sydney for a couple of days and I took a day trip up to Newcastle, which is absolutely possible. Of course, if you go down to Sydney, you might want to kind of stay for the entire weekend. But if you want to make it a day trip, then that's absolutely possible. You get on an early morning train. I think it was a little less than 3 hours, kind of door to door. And then in the evening, you just kind of jump on the train again and go home and you have a full day to explore. So I found it very accessible as well.
Yeah, it's a really easy train ride and it's really cheap. It's less than $10 to catch the train from Sydney to Newcastle because we're actually on the same network. We're still on the same train line. So and you're not changing trains. It's door to door from Newcastle right through to Central Station in Sydney.
And I remember it was a really beautiful train ride as well, going up there. There were a lot of lakes, a lot of nature, and yeah.
It is. It follows the coast.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Right. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, and all through the central coast, you pass the water. So you're following the water a lot of the way and then through the national park on the northern edge of Sydney coming into the city. So yeah, it is. It's a really beautiful train ride.
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect.
And I think we should also, I always find it a little bit funny because I am from a small town in Germany, or that's where I originally grew up. And then sometimes when we talk about these cities, it makes it sound like, okay, it's not Sydney, it's a lot smaller, but actually it's a decent sized city in its own right. And there's a lot of things to do, right?
Yeah, it's still like half a million people.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
So it's certainly not small. You're not talking a little 20,000 town. It's certainly got everything you need that a big city has, just without the hustle and bustle and the hours sitting in traffic or getting on a train and it being fully packed. Like it just doesn't have that feel, but it's certainly got everything you need. It's certainly not a little backward small town, that's for sure.
And it's definitely bigger than my hometown too.
So, right, because we have different dimensions.
Small. I mean, yeah.
Exactly. We have different dimensions in Germany sometimes. So.
Yeah, different size. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. But yeah, I think you guys have already mentioned a couple of things why it's such a nice city and such a good place to visit. But what would you guys think are probably the top three reasons why students should consider spending their study abroad semester in Newcastle rather than, let's say, Sydney or any other city in Australia for that matter?
Yeah, I think let's be practical. Cost is one of the reasons why students should consider Newcastle. Because looking at the cost of accommodation, grocery, etc., by some of the surveys done in the market, Newcastle is actually 20 to 60% cheaper than the cost of living in Brisbane, Melbourne, and Sydney. Mm-hmm. So I guess if you can, as a study abroad student, if you actually save up the daily cost of living, that gives you a chance to do more excursion weekend trips, summer, winter break, or pre or post study abroad kind of Asia or Pacific kind of tour. That would be quite a good deal for your excursion, flying so far away for a semester.
Mm-hmm. So that's one.
Yep. Adam, do you think of any other reasons?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I would say one of the most feedback we get from our study abroad students is that it's a really authentic Australian experience. It's what they see on the TV or what they expect. It's that meeting Aussie locals, making an Aussie friend, sitting on the beach, having a beer by the water. Like it's a really Australian, authentic experience. It's got the beautiful weather of we've spoken about. Because we're not such the big city, I feel our students, domestic students that is, aren't quite as busy in life. So they're happy making friends, driving people around, maybe taking you for a camping trip. So I feel you've got that really good chance to have that really Australian, authentic study abroad experience while you're here.
Yeah, I totally agree to that because I traveled to Australia quite a lot before I actually moved here, but I enjoy the internationalized taste of some other major cities in Australia. But moving here is like, oh, I'm really finally part of the Australian culture. I'm in it, like everyday life. I see everything really Aussie around me. And another reason and another attractive point is that as a foreigner, I feel that the indigenous culture is very rich here in Newcastle, particularly. Just on the campus, we also have a Wulatuka Institute, which is an indigenous institute that promote the indigenous culture in the region. So I feel like getting my foot into Newcastle and the uni actually also opened up me to the real historical tradition, etc., of the indigenous Australian culture. So I guess this is one of the things students may consider coming to experience the real Australian environment, I would say.
I think that's a really good point because when you're in one of the big cities, it's very easy to kind of forget about that part of Australian history and the Indigenous heritage because you're kind of in this very internationalized place. Whereas in smaller towns, that may just be slightly different. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel the big city feel. It's just you could just be in any other big city in the world, like Sydney and Hong Kong and Singapore and London, and they all just feel like big cities. They kind of feel very similar in many ways, similar shops, similar feel, whereas I feel Newcastle, you're getting that real different sort of Australian experience.
Right. Yeah, no, that sounds good. Now, we've talked a lot about location, which is, of course, an important factor for many students when choosing a university for their study abroad adventure. But another important factor that we haven't talked about that much yet is, of course, the university itself. especially in terms of academic quality and the courses that are available to study abroad students. So why don't you give us a quick overview about the range of programs offered at the University of Newcastle?
Sure. So the University of Newcastle is a top 200 uni in the world, and we are comprehensive with a wide range of disciplines, like from business to engineering, sciences to health, social sciences, humanities. So basically covering all that you can study in a university. We do particularly strong in engineering and automation. And recent years, we have invested a lot of research and efforts and improving quality of our programs in environmental science, sustainability, disaster risk, resilience, this area. So I would also say that apart from engineering, probably the environmental science side is pretty much getting stronger and stronger. In terms of courses that students may consider taking, I think if they have any electives from their home university, they can surely consider some unique courses that can only be studied here, apart from their major, their core courses, compared to what they can already do in Germany. So a few highlights, I would say Introduction to Aboriginal Studies, which is very welcome, always either top the number one or number two most popular course for our international student here every year. We also have the Australian Experience course that looks into the Australian history, give you the context and compare it to the recent contemporary world in real life. There are also courses like our oceans that let you learn about how we protect our oceans, why is it important. There's no better place to study about ocean in the world if you look at the beautiful oceans and coastline that we have. Another two that is for any student's interest would be Foundations in Digital Photography. Everyone talks about taking a good Instagrammable photo now. So why not polish up your skills in a professional way? You can also take an elective like that. And of course, literature lovers go for Australian literature and culture. I am an English major when I study university in Hong Kong. It was just a pity that they just only teach like general literature, culture, or very focused in the British one. So when I saw this course, I should have gone on exchange here and do the Australian literature and culture, because it's interesting to compare these different sides of the same thing. Yeah.
And these are courses that any study abroad student could take, regardless of what they're studying at their home country, right?
That's right. The subjects that I have just mentioned are all electives level, level 1000. So it's applicable to all students. Mm-hmm. And indeed, when the students are interested in some 2000 level courses, so long they have met any prerequisite in their home university, they are welcome just to mix and match any disciplines they like.
It's one of the great things about the study abroad program is that you don't have to pick the courses. Like if you're a business student, you don't just have to go into our business school. You can pick from any courses across our university as long as you meet the prerequisites. So we don't streamline you into a specific school. You can select from all our courses available.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Especially if we have students who, for example, study to become teachers and they typically study two subjects. So they might study biology and English. Then later teach those two subjects. And sometimes when they go on an exchange, they will go through one of those departments and then they might only be able to take biology or English. Whereas if they go as study abroad students, they have that freedom to, as you say, pick and choose. And in terms of the digital photography course, I was just thinking that might be a course that would be really cool to take for one of our students who's interested in either the Instagram takeover or the Campus Reporter Scholarship.
Right.
Right. So that would be a great way for the student to kind of brush up on their digital photography and maybe filmography skills while at the same time kind of working on those two initiatives. So
good idea.
That's definitely something for us to keep in mind.
All right. So I understand the University of Newcastle has more than one campus, right?
That's right.
How many are there?
Yeah, we actually have a few different campuses in New South Wales. The most common ones are the Callaghan Main Campus, the Newcastle City Campus, the Central Coast Campus, as well as the Sydney Campus. Of course, we also have our offshore campus in Singapore. But among those in Australia, I think the ones that students would go to study would likely be Callaghan Main Campus, as well as the City Campus. In terms of campus, I think it's good to highlight the very different experience students can actually get when they are here. If they are in the Newcastle City Campus, they would be in a very modern, high-rise, sort of high-rise, not really like in like 20-story high, but 8-level story kind of building, like full-length glass window overlooking the harbour view. You can see the Nobis Lighthouse, you can see the wharf, you can see ships coming in. So that's a very nice new environment for students, and it mostly hosts the business and law disciplines, a little bit in creative industries. And so that is what we call the Newcastle City Campus. Then we are building a few new prisons in the city as well, mainly for creative industries and the Innovation Network Hub. It's going to be open to most students, I think, this year in 2022. So that's what we call the Honeysuckle Q building, where the makerspace and a lot of studios, workshops are available. Talking about the other campus, which is our main campus, Callaghan, it is named as the unique bushland campus here in Australia. So when we call it a bushland campus, Alex and Elias, can you make a guess like how many trees we have on the Callaghan campus?
How many trees? Okay.
Yeah, make a guess.
Oh gosh, I'm totally...
I'm saying 20,000, just a ridiculously high number.
I say 25,000.
Wow. Do you want to hear the answer? That's still quite a bit of distance to it. So that's 2 million trees in the Callaghan campus.
Oh, you're slightly off.
Just slightly off.
Yeah, you were close.
You are right. Close.
You won, exactly. Good guess.
Yeah, so that's a really unique experience. When I was stepping into the Callaghan campus first time, I was like, wow, am I on a campus? The campus hosts most of the facilities, the on-campus accommodations, a lot of teaching space. So most of our classes are actually here, except for a lot of the business classes, law, and a little bit of the creative industry would be in the city. But it's easily connected with a free shuttle bus service that runs from as early as 7 a.m. till 11 p.m. Monday to Friday for students to commute across the city. Mm-hmm. I personally take advantage of that to go for shopping in the city, actually. But
it's only 15 minutes apart, too.
Ah, okay.
That's right. So it's...
How many? Two? 2 minutes. Oh.
15 minutes from one campus to the other. Yeah. So super quick and easy. So if you're looking at courses and you want to take some on Callaghan, some in the city, it's perfectly fine to do both.
So in terms of trees, I think I was just shown a very small part of campus when I visited. That's why I was so off.
To justify your guess.
Exactly, of course. Oh, they were all planted recently.
Yeah, right.
No, certainly not. Tree. I'm just kidding. But I mean, trees are great, but what about animals? Do you have any cool animals on campus that that students might get a glimpse of when they're there?
Yeah, we have lots of great animals.
Yeah, the last time I had a walk around the campus after work to just sort of de-stress a little bit, I bumped into a kookaburra singing loudly right in front of me, took some videos of it and still singing. So I was instantly distressed. And there is a Don Morris walk on campus, which is like a short 20-minute walk. And you feel like you are in the national park. Like you don't see any building, you just hear birds. You just hear some animals, some ducks, some frogs, and you pass by a little pond and some grassland so that you can just see many different kinds of creatures, animals over there as well on the Don Morris walk in the campus.
We also have lots of possums. Lots of possums always visit us. on top of our building, and we can hear them walking on our roof of our office building. It's like, there's those possums in our class again. So yeah, you'll see it. And very occasionally you'll see a kangaroo up in the back corner of the campus, because we back onto a golf course which has a lot of kangaroos on it, and they'll occasionally hop mm-hmm. over onto the campus.
What is it with kangaroos and golf courses?
Well, they just love it. Yep. I play a lot of golf.
Do you know why that is? No, because the only places I've ever seen kangaroos really was on golf courses or next to golf courses.
Yeah.
Is it the grass? Is it the wide open space? Is it the people?
I don't know. I think it's a bit of all of the above. Obviously, golf courses have beautiful grass, so it's a great place for them to go and eat a lot of grass. But yes, the amount of times we've had to stand there and wait for a kangaroo to move before hitting our golf ball, so we didn't want to hit them. But yeah, the Shortland Golf Course backs on to us. So yeah, it's an amazing sight when you can be running through the campus and see a kangaroo. It's pretty cool.
Any koalas as well, or are none of the trees, none of the 2 million trees, eucalyptus trees?
No, they're not really eucalyptus. So I haven't really seen any koalas, but certainly nearby, just 5 kilometers from the campus, is a place called Black Butt Reserve, and it's actually just a free park. So it's not a zoo, it's just a park run by the council. And there's kangaroos, koalas, emus, wombats. And you can just turn up there. You have the beautiful 2 big wombats. I take my kids there all the time, and you can become less than a meter from a koala. And students can easily catch a bus from the Callaghan campus to Black Butt. And like I said, it's free, and you just have a wander around, have a picnic. And yeah, it's an amazing thing for Newcastle residents to have right in the heart of our city.
Definitely. Yeah. Any dangerous animals as well?
Oh, we have snakes. We definitely have a lot of we have snakes on campus, but mainly friendly ones, mainly friendly. We have a green tree snake that hangs out on a bridge. And it's kind of famous, and people, I think it might have its own Instagram, or people take photos of it all the time. And it's the famous green tree snake that on the bridge.
Yeah, whenever I see those posts, I would try to go to that bridge and see, oh, am I lucky today to see him or her? Uh-huh. But so far, no luck. Keep trying.
All right.
So let's talk a little bit about accommodation. You guys have just mentioned the two campuses, the Callaghan being the main campus and then the one in the city. Where would study abroad students usually live? Could they, or are they eligible to live on campus in one of the accommodations, or would they typically live elsewhere?
Absolutely. So we have a really large accommodation precinct, 1,800 beds, 8 colleges. So it's really large. 4 of them have been around for a while, up to 20 years or so, and then 4 of them were recently built only about 4 years ago. That's all based on the Callaghan campus. But like we said, with the free shuttle, you can easily catch the free shuttle, which drops at the front door of accommodation. So even if you're taking all the courses in the city, you can certainly still live on campus on the Callaghan campus. That's no worries. I personally lived on campus all 3 years of my degree, and I absolutely loved it. When people ask me about university life, really all I think about is my time living on campus, all the friends I made, all the social activities. We had a lot of study abroad students live there. I lived with some German students, some Americans, a Swede, some students from the UK, Canada. So you get to live with students from all over the world. I guess the great thing about living on campus is you sort of instantly can make a great network of Australian and international friends very quickly. And as we were saying before, because you're only there for 4 to 5 months, you don't have a long time. So the quicker you can create those networks and friendship groups and things like that, the better. It also really helps to be able to like meet an Australian who has a car and they can take you around and things like that. But having said that, lots of study abroad students do decide to live right in the city, right next to the beach. Cook's Hill, Bar Beach, mm-hmm. Derby Street. There's all these great little areas, the hill right in the city centre, that they also would have an amazing time. I think they both have their positives. So it's really an individual's choice. But yeah, study abroad students can certainly apply. It is competitive, but as long as you get in early enough, you give yourself the best chance.
Got it.
And they would typically live in a single room, but they would share kind of an apartment or house with other students, right?
Yeah, it varies greatly across the eight colleges as to the setup of them. But in Australia, we're very much single room people. So they're pretty much all, apart from one of the colleges, you have your own room, but then maybe you share with 5 to 10 others a kitchen and a bathroom.
Right.
And then if you're a cook out there, there are colleges where you have all your own kitchen facilities. But if you're one of those people that doesn't like to cook, there's also options where you can get fully catered.
Okay. No, I was just asking because that's something, especially in the US, mm-hmm. that prevents our students often from living on campus because they typically have to share a room, which is very uncommon in Germany as well.
Yes.
Maybe with your brother or your sister, you've shared a room, but at a student dorm, you would typically have your own room. You might share the bathroom and kitchen facilities, but you'd have your own room. So I think in the US, it's part of the experience. So I think for a couple of months, it can be cool to do that as well. Mm-hmm. But I also understand if students don't want to do that. So Australia seems to be a little more like Germany in terms of how much privacy a student wants
yes,
to have.
Definitely. There's also on our website, there's really cool little video tours of each of the accommodations. So if it's something a student's interested in, they can jump on the accommodation website and watch little video tours, which are really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
That's convenient. And so we've talked a little bit about the Callaghan campus, but could you perhaps elaborate a little bit on what the campus life is like? For instance, we've just talked about the US, and I know there are a lot of like sporting facilities on a US campus. What's it like in on campus in Newcastle?
Yeah, absolutely. So the last 2 years, obviously, it's just been so dead, which has just been so sad on campus. So we're so excited to have internationals and domestic students back and get that vibe going again, because when there are a lot of students around, it is a great place to be. And even though there's a whole lot of bushland, there's also a whole lot of space for students to get together. We have this great little food precinct with like Subway and Gloria Jeans and cafes and things like that. We have a pub on campus called Bar on the Hill, has bar trivia. They get these great bands come, gets a lot of local talent, and some have gone on to become some of the biggest bands in Australia. And you can get up to 1,000 people in there. So it is an incredible place for live music and just sitting back and having a beer after class, maybe listening to the birds and the wildlife. We also have a lot of big events each semester. So there's like Cultural Awakenings Festival. There's the Festival of Autonomy, which is like a week-long activities celebrating when we became independent back in 1965 and we broke away from the University of New South Wales. So every year in our semester two, we have this week of activities, which is a whole lot of fun. So there's always something going on around campus, which is really cool. In terms of sports facilities, we have a really large gym. It's called the Forum, and an Olympic-sized swimming pool on campus. It's just like 200 meter walk from our on-campus accommodation there. There's also a 17 meter high rock climbing wall. I think there's 6 sports ovals, squash courts. So yeah, there's a whole lot to do, and it's quite cheap as a student to join the gym. So you can join the gym just for one semester. It is also fine.
And beyond campus, what do domestic or local students enjoy doing in their free time in Newcastle? Going to the beach,
campus,
obviously.
Yeah, absolutely going to the beach. And as a new resident here, and I'm not the kind of person who dip myself in the water, but I go beach hopping. Mm-hmm. So I visit different beach and just sit there, relax a little bit, have a chat with a friend, and then go to the next beach just to change the vibe a little bit. Apart from beach hopping, I also go cafe hopping, gallery hopping, because this is the thing I really enjoy in Newcastle. Very calm city, vibrant in a subtle way. They have a lot of things going on, but not too loud. So all those cafes, little markets, galleries actually gets you refreshed, gets you new idea. So that's the best thing for me to do during the weekends beyond campus. And I see a lot of students doing that as well, because that's a good time to mingle with locals and get to know about your neighborhood, the community, how do people live their life here. A lot of small talks happens with the people you bump into.
And what about you, Adam? What would you say?
We also have little like microbreweries and hidden bars in the city. So it's pretty cool to go like bar hopping and then sit back along Honeysuckle, which watch the big ships come in and have a beer of an afternoon. I love to go bike riding around the coastline, but we also, for any bike riders out there, we have some amazing mountain biking through Glenrock Reserve. So there is a few, Dan the Bike Man, a few other places where you can pick up quite a cheap bike. So a student could easily, if they were really into it, buy a bike, probably sell it at the end of the semester for a very similar price and get into bike riding and riding around. I also love like just barbecues with mates. It's a very Aussie thing to do. But again, if you're living off campus or you're living on campus and you make some Australian friends, you'll find a lot of the time you'll just be sitting in a backyard, maybe having a drink, having a sausage on the barbecue, listening to music. That's very Australian way. So we love doing that of a Saturday and Sunday afternoon with all the kids running around and just enjoying a barbecue.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things I'm most envious about with regard to people living in warmer climates is I love outdoor dining. I just think it's so different to sitting inside a restaurant. So I feel like that's the best thing about summer is just being able to go to go to a bar, go to a restaurant, go to a beer garden and just sit outside with friends and eat and enjoy a drink, have a barbecue, as you say. So being able to do that all year round would definitely be kind of a selling point for me. I don't know, Elias, what about you?
Yeah, same. No, I would, definitely prefer doing stuff outdoors than indoors. After having like 2 years of a pandemic and being in the middle of winter in Germany here, you kind of like understand how much you miss all of that stuff. But
Right. Yeah. Although we must say that that's one thing COVID has given us here in Germany is outdoor dining all year round.
That's true.
In a way,
I don't know if you want to do it in the winter.
No, but a lot of people prefer kind of being outside when they go out with friends. And so a lot of the bars and cafes and restaurants here, they have kind of expanded their outdoor areas. They have built little tents and they have their little heaters. And so you basically see people in the middle of winter with a blanket on and sitting outside having a coffee, which you would never have seen before COVID.
That's true.
You'd have seen the smoker standing outside having a smoke, but you wouldn't have seen people in the middle of winter just even like having a regular meal at a restaurant outdoors. It definitely feels better if you can do that without a blanket, without a hat, without gloves. So that's great. Well, what if students end up liking their experience in Newcastle so much that they would like to come back to maybe do their master's or PhD in Newcastle? Would that be possible? And if yes, are there any master's programs that you find are particularly popular with international or maybe even specifically German or European students?
Yeah, sure. We do see that happen for a few times as well, like how students end up liking it here a lot and come back here either for further studies or come back for work, or they might have found their partners. In terms of master programs, there are a pretty wide range of master degrees available as well. But what I would recommend for consideration is a few of them. Like the first one is Master of Environmental Law, because there are more and more young people who are very aware and conscious about how we are treating our environment and wants to be part of the people who can make an impact. And in the industry, they might actually need to understand the law and how to actually utilize it to advocate for environmental friendly measures. So this Master of Environmental Law, which is a 1 year, full year program, it would help equip legal or non-legal professionals to deepen their knowledge in this field. So that might be something students would think about. Like this is pretty new kind of discipline in recent years.
And it's also a very international field within law, because law, yeah, of course, typically is very kind of very much based on the country, the nation
that's
you're
right.
in. But environmental law, I would say definitely environmental problems can only be solved internationally. So yeah, that's a very international aspect. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. And then other than that, I think probably Master of Professional Engineering has always been very popular for international students, because that helps undergraduate or even people who are in the industry to actually advance their career and broaden their skills base in a complementary area, such as a bit about business, a bit about management, entrepreneurship, innovation, design, multimedia. And this program actually helps them to have hands-on experience through the industry-based kind of projects. So I guess that's also a very popular degree that is sought after in the master level. Mm. Yeah. And lastly, what is getting a little bit more attention in this couple of years is the Master of Cybersecurity 2 years program, as well as the Master of Information Technology, also a 2 year program. So I guess technology in this space, in the digital space, is getting really part of our life now, no doubt. So be it very specialized professional in cybersecurity or just a broad flexible technical degree in IT, these master programs will be suitable.
Sounds yeah. good. All right. We're almost at the end of this podcast, but, and as you've listened to the podcast episode with Simon and Katie from UTS, you already know this, there is one particularly fun section of each podcast at the very end, our this or that questions, where we're going to ask you a series of short questions where you give you a choice between two alternatives, ask you to spontaneously pick one, and then maybe provide a little bit of context as to why you've chosen that one. Are you both up for that?
Yes, yeah, sure. Bring it on.
Bring it on. Okay, I will. So, first one, what do you prefer? A late morning brunch or an afternoon tea?
Late morning brunch.
What about you, Adam? You have little kids. Is there something like late morning for you?
I would say afternoon, but I wouldn't say tea. I'd be more afternoon drinks and nibbles.
All right. Sounds good. So, Debbie, what do you prefer having during your late morning brunch? Are you more an avocado, a smashed avocado on sourdough bread person? Are you more the Vegemite person? No Vegemite.
I'm still not used to it. I gave it a try, but not so much for my taste buds. But okay, definitely avocado toast is what I usually go after for brunch. It just gives me like a very Aussie feeling, like, oh, I'm now in Australia kind of feeling, to have that rich late brunch in a weekend morning. That feels very good to go all together right. with a cup of coffee for sure.
Of course. So, Adam, are you an advocate for Vegemite or?
I love Vegemite. I feel a lot of Australians, because we have it so early. I have a 3 and 5 year old, and I've been giving them Vegemite both since before they were 1 year old. They've both been eating Vegemite, so they both love it. They have Vegemite every day on their sandwich, without a doubt. So I'm all for Vegemite on toast.
I think you have to kind of be brought up with it.
So it's just one of those funny things, isn't it? If you had it as a kid, you love it. But if you're not trying it till an adult, it's probably not one of your favorite things.
Mm-hmm. Right. I feel like that's the same with spicy food. It's like in many countries, it's very common for very young children to start eating spicy food. So they're basically used to it from an early age. But here in Germany, we typically wouldn't give a 2-year-old a spicy dish because we'd figure they might not like it. So, yeah. All right. So we talked a little bit about, of course, about beaches. So we have to touch upon that as well. Which beach do you prefer to hang out at? Nobby's Beach or Merriweather?
Tough one. I think I'll go for Nobby's.
I'm definitely Why? Merriweather.
That's why we have two people in the podcast.
Because yeah. I don't dip myself into the water, but I want more like walk. After a bit of walk, then we sit down, or even if I go by myself, I sit down, have a think about like life, whatever things happen to me. So Nobby's Beach gave me this space to actually do it. Yeah.
And you said, Adam, you're definitely Merriweather.
Yeah, Merriweather has one of the best surf breaks going around on the east coast of Australia. So you get an amazing wave from the point. But not only that, Merriweather also has the Merriweather Baths, which is actually one of the largest ocean baths in the Southern Hemisphere. So if you turn up and the waves are really big and it just doesn't look pleasant to swim in, you've got this beautiful ocean baths, which is a lot bigger than an Olympic-sized swimming pool, where you can just go and swim and still experience the ocean water without the waves. So it's amazing to have the best of both worlds in one spot.
That's fantastic. I think that's also what you can see on a lot of pictures, a lot of aerials from Newcastle is the big ocean bath at Merriweather, right? Or Nobby's Lighthouse.
That's more like Newcastle. Either. Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Both spectacular features.
Yeah, cool. So my next question, you've already almost answered, I think, Adam. Or Adam, I know what your answer is going to be. Let's just put it that way. But where would I rather find you on a Saturday afternoon? Hitting the shops on Derby Street or having a drink with mates in the Honeysuckle Precinct?
I'm definitely drinks with mates. I'm definitely drinks with mates.
Drinks with mates.
Me, the other choice, obviously.
Definitely shopping for Debbie.
Perfect. Let's see if we can kind of keep it that way, that you always choose opposite ends.
The Honeysuckle Hotel and the brewery, they both have beautiful big decks that look straight out over the water, and sitting there with a cold beer and the sun on your back, watching the ocean come in and watching the boats come in with friends, it really doesn't get any better, I don't think.
Gosh, I think, Elias, you're getting more envious by the minute,
definitely.
Right? But in general, what is the better way to spend the weekend? Exploring the vineyards of Hunter Valley or visiting the koala sanctuary at Port Stephens?
Koala. That's all I come to Australia for.
Is getting up close with the koalas and the wildlife?
I'll go to the wineries because it's an amazing day out there. There's 125 wineries to choose from.
Oh, wow.
And not only is it all about the wines, but pretty much every one of the vineyards has incredible restaurants, like some of the best restaurants you're going to have. So not only can you troll all the wines, but you're going to have amazing Australian food at the same time. So for me, a day at the vineyards is a whole lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. What kind of wines is Hunter Valley famous for?
Yeah, I think the Shiraz, some of the reds, but also whites. We're one of the great wine regions in Australia. But yeah, I believe Shiraz and some of the whites are some of the famous wines, but they're all good to me.
Sounds great. And then final question, getting back to wildlife. What is more fun for you to watch, dolphins or whales?
This one is really hard to choose.
Oh, I'm definitely dolphins. For me, definitely dolphins.
Okay.
I think Debbie,
you have to go with whales.
First time ever I picked the same thing with
dolphins.
You.
What?
Yeah.
I choose dolphins.
Yeah. I feel dolphins are much more exciting to watch because, one, they come in super close. So if you're doing the walk that I was talking about, the Bathers Way walk on a beautiful Saturday morning, more often than not, you're going to see dolphins in the waves, just like 50 meters out from the shore. So you can watch them surfing through the waves. You can see them jumping. I just really love watching them have a great time. Whereas whales, yes, they come straight past Newcastle and we can see them a few hundred meters out, but it's more just like a flap of the tail or a blow of their blowhole. It's not the excitement of the jumping around that dolphins do.
Yeah, this is exactly how I felt when I first see them. Like, oh, is that a group of dolphins? I couldn't believe it because I thought they couldn't get so close to me. And I was, no, that's real. So that sort of excite me for the first time and still so much every time I go close to the water in the right season. And then it's just fascinating to see how they travel together as a group, jumping sometimes, surfing on the wave, and then they move away and then another group coming. So it's really fascinating to watch.
Sounds great. So you finally found a topic you both agreed on, which I think is a perfect
Thank
way.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Elias, for the question.
Yeah. It's a perfect way for us to end this episode on a common ground. So,
exactly.
Yeah, all that's left for me to say is thank you for spending your evening with us. I think we learned a lot about Newcastle, and I think we learned a lot about the reasons why students should definitely consider coming to Newcastle, especially if they're not kind of not big city people. Then definitely, I would say Newcastle is a place to explore. And as you mentioned, it's so close to Sydney that students can definitely still kind of enjoy everything that Sydney has to offer, and not just once at the end of their semester, but they can basically go there, let's say at least once a month for the weekend, for a day.
Yeah,
go see a show, go to an event, or just kind of explore the city. So I think it's really the best of both worlds, being in a smaller place, but then having access to Sydney, and of course having access to the rest of Australia as well. Because I mean, we talked about Sydney and Newcastle, but of course, if you go up north the coast, there's so much more to explore in New South Wales, or even if you maybe at the end of the semester rent a car and go all the way up to Queensland, up the way to Townsville and Cairns. That's a beautiful drive. It's a long drive, but it's a beautiful drive, and you can stop along the way. So I think there's really great options to explore. It's very well located, actually, in terms of going out and exploring.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We actually do have an airport in Newcastle too, so with direct flights to both Brisbane and Melbourne. So easy weekends to both those two great cities, direct flights, usually between $50 to $100, so really reasonably priced too.
All right. So yeah, another thing to consider. And again, thank you so much for spending your time
thank
with us.
Thank you so much.
No worries. Thanks for having us.
And we look forward to speaking with you again. Take care.
Take care. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Bye. Na Elias, wie sieht's aus? Du fandest es ja nach unserer Folge mit der UTS schon schwierig, dich zwischen Sydney und Melbourne zu entscheiden. Und jetzt ist mit Newcastle noch eine ziemlich coole Option dazugekommen.
Ja, das stimmt. Einfacher ist es definitiv nicht geworden.
Was gefällt dir denn an Newcastle jetzt besonders gut?
Mir gefällt an Newcastle besonders, dass es eine Großstadt ist, die allerdings nicht so hektisch und überfüllt, sondern relativ schnell familiär wirkt. Außerdem fand ich es interessant zu hören, wie viel Newcastle in Sachen Lifestyle und Wildlife zu bieten hat.
Und das ist ja offensichtlich eine ganze Menge. Ich finde es so skurril, dass die Kängurus sich auch in Newcastle bevorzugt auf dem Golfplatz rumtreiben.
Ja, echt witzig.
Wenn ihr euch auch auf die Suche nach Kängurus auf Golfplätzen machen möchtet oder wenn ihr einfach mehr über die University of Newcastle erfahren wollt, dann schaut am besten gleich mal in die Shownotes zu dieser Episode.
Dort findet ihr einen Link zum Hochschulprofil auf unserer Website, zu den Erfahrungsberichten und zum Campus Reporter Stipendium, das wir gemeinsam mit der University of Newcastle für das Semester ab Juli 2022 vergeben.
Wie versprochen, verlinken wir in den Shownotes auch nochmal die beiden Websites zur Corona-Lage und zu den Einreisebestimmungen für New South Wales, die Debbie ganz zu Beginn der Folge erwähnt hat.
Zu guter Letzt findet ihr in den Shownotes natürlich wie immer auch unsere Kontaktdaten. Meldet euch bei uns, wenn ihr mehr über das Study Abroad Programm der University of Newcastle erfahren oder euch generell zu den Möglichkeiten eines Auslandssemesters in Australien beraten lassen möchtet. Wir schicken euch dann auch gern unsere aktuelle Bewerbungsanleitung mit vielen Infos und Tipps zum Bewerbungsablauf. Die Anleitung ist übrigens ebenso kostenlos wie unser gesamter Beratungs- und Bewerbungsservice, da wir von unseren Partnerhochschulen dafür bezahlt werden.
Die nächste Folge gibt es schon Ende Februar. Bis dahin sagen wir danke fürs Zuhören, bleibt gesund und habt eine gute Zeit. Tschüss!